If it's okay with the chairman, if we could have Leslie Ann McGee, who's no longer staff but served as the PDT chair during the last PDT meeting, and she's available in here for about the next 10 or 15 minutes, if she could join the discussion at the table in addition to the support that we have from Dave Stevenson through NIMS. Okay, thank you. The Habitat Committee met yesterday. The materials from that the committee was working with are behind tab 7. The primary discussion was around the potential HAPC designation in the Great South Channel per a motion that came from the council at the June council meeting. And that motion is on page 1 of document 1 behind tab 7. The motion was to basically for the Habitat PDT and the committee to consider another iteration of an HAPC designation in the Great South Channel that would be focused on juvenile cod EFH as newly designated through phase 1 of the Habitat Amendment. So that's what we did. Just to be clear on the history here, this is the third iteration of an HAPC over the past 2 years now. The original proposal that was submitted was a number of very small, discrete areas that the committee and the PDT didn't come to any agreement on to forward a proposal to the council. There was a larger box that was drawn that's featured in most, if not all, of the maps that are in the PDT document. So you can see the second iteration was that larger box, which again was not deemed as appropriate by the committee to recommend to the full council as an HAPC. So we've had this third iteration based on this continued discussion of the importance of the area and a desire to refine the HAPC based on its importance especially for juvenile cod. I just remind the council that as you look at the alternative that the PDT has recommended, and then I'll ask Dave Stevenson and Leslie Ann to comment on the new essential fish habitat designation for EFH, which the council adopted unanimously earlier this year, is based on the improved methodology for identifying EFH, including not just presence and absence of fish, but also habitat parameters. What I'd like to do is just have the PDT report on the what the recommendation that they gave to the committee, then offer the committee motion, which was based in part on the PDT's recommendation, and then explain the motion at the conclusion of that.
Yeah, I'm on the Habitat PDT, so I'll sort of switch hats for a minute and talk about what the PDT did and the basis for their recommendation to the committee. Where's Chris? Might be helpful to get that map up there. Chris, if you could put up, was it map 3 from the PDT report, I think it would make this easier. The PDT was provided, the Science Center provided the PDT with data on catches of juvenile cod in the fall and spring bottom trawl surveys. in the Great South Channel area within the original area of Alternative 8, HAPC designation Alternative 8 in the DEIS. And everyone, I think, immediately went to the place of wanting to reduce the size of the HAPC so that it included some subset of juvenile cod EFH within that area. And what the PDT did was essentially take the, if you flip over to map 4 on the PDT report, you can see the concentration of catches of juvenile cod. Now, I should explain that juvenile cod, there's a lot of discussion on this at the committee meeting. We're talking about fish up to the size of a maturity here. We're not just talking about recently settled young of the year cod. We're talking about cod that could be 2-3 years old when we talk about juveniles. So the catches here are shown simply as either one fish or more than one fish in the area. And there was some other information. There is some other information on maps 7 and 8, which show a little bit more detail in terms of actual catch rates for either young of the year cod, which are the open circles, or the closed boxes, which are older cod. Still juveniles, but older juveniles. So the PDT looked at this information, considered also what we know about the kinds of substrates that are in this area, particularly it's on the western side of the Great South Channel. Information that had been provided previously in the original proposal on benthic epifauna and where that occurs in the area, and recommended to the committee that the area shown in map 3, if we can go back to map 3, there. Now, what that map is showing is the dark gray area is the area that was recommended by the PDT. If you can see the single bottom contour running through that, that's the 50-meter contour. And the funny-shaped dotted line box is the original Alternative 8, HAPC designation alternative. So, and the light gray area is... The light gray area and the dark gray area together are juvenile cod EFH as been designated in the DEIS, in the alternative that has been selected by the council. So you can see that the dark gray area is a subset of all the gray area. So the PDT was recommending that only the area, the dark gray area, be considered as an HAPC.
And, when we do areas, we usually do latitude and longitudes and straight lines. Did the PDT talk about that? Because this is kind of unique. And
we did have this discussion at the committee, and we talked about it in the context of the new EFH designations. Those designations are not based on straight lines. They're based on whether a particular location is or is not essential fish habitat. And likewise, the thought was that here in phase one, that it's more appropriate if a location is a habitat area of particular concern, then it should be designated as such. And then in phase two, when measures are developed around EFH in general and potentially HAPCs specifically, then the straight lines would need to be drawn for management and enforcement purposes. But we're thinking of it as a refinement and a focal point of EFH, and just as a designation, and because we're not talking about a management measure right now, opted not to talk about drawing straight lines around the area that the PDT recommended.
But the issue is that some of the others, you're right, they say things like out to the, 50-fathom curve or whatever. This one, you still need some way to describe it. Because we can't just have the picture. So I think we still need to think about how to do that.
There actually is a way. It can be described as by depth, because the irregular shaped area here is between 30 and 120 meters, which is Jumoka DFH on the shelf, and then the rest of it would be entire 10-minute squares.
So I'll go ahead and offer the committee motion and then the justification behind it. I don't have it written here. I'll describe it. It's the motion was to adopt the PDT recommended area as an HAPC and to extend it to the west to 70 west longitude. So the line that runs up through through the Cape and through Nantucket and the Cape. And the reasoning behind that was we had an extensive discussion about the appropriate area to include in the HAPC, decided upon consideration of some documents that were given to you this morning from the Fishery Survival Fund, that there was interest in extending the area to the west to include areas that, again, just those areas that are juvenile cod EFH. So it's not the entire area, but once you get the map, we get the map back up there, you'll be able to see that it's just the area that is juvenile cod EFH all the way to the western boundary of the original Great South Channel HAPC proposal. And the justification behind this is as Dave Stevenson described, but also the general consensus around the table that the Nantucket Shoals area is important juvenile cod habitat and needs to be included in the HAPC that's associated with the Great South Channel. I assume that there's going to be a great deal of discussion about the eastern edge of this HAPC proposal. We discussed this at length. We had a number of maps in front of us that the PDT did not review, but the committee considered in its deliberation and further clarified the validity of keeping the eastern extent of the HAPC extending to as the PDT had recommended. I don't know if there are others on the committee who would like to chime in on this, but we don't have a map, unfortunately, that shows this. But if we could have the map back up, that describes the area, I think, more easily than the words might in the motion. If I could, Mr. Chairman, just so people can understand what I'm talking about, I think it might be easier if I just went up there and pointed, because we couldn't, they didn't have the overlay. Can I just point? So within that area, it would only be the dark gray plus the light gray, the dark gray being the PDT recommendation, the light gray being the additional juvenile cod EFH.
We have a committee motion. I have a question, Sally. We've got a dark gray area, dark gray shape, and then you said the light gray to the west of it. What about the white in between the light gray and the dark gray?
Well, we talked about that a lot. That is not included in the new juvenile COD EFH designation, largely because surveys have not been conducted in that area due to depth.
Okay.
And the committee talked about wanting to do that and not leaving the hole in the middle. And we talked about other species for which EFH has been designated in that area, like winter flounder. But the purpose of this HAPC is to protect, is to focus on juvenile cod.
Anyone else on the Habitat Committee that wants to comment? Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I have quite a few comments, actually. That area of white, we would like to at some point explore an amendment to the EFH to include that area. There was a great deal of testimony from the Fisheries Survival Fund that indicated that that area should have been included, and at some point we would like to revisit that question and try to get that designated as EFH and then include it. But within the parameters that we could work with, it was not possible. The other problem that we had was, the discussion we had was of the area to the east of the 50-meter curve, or 50-meter line, rather. And that area has a great deal of habitat area of particular concern, but it's localized. There are three large areas that have very suitable bottom and also large numbers of juvenile cod. When we get to the point of making any potential management decisions, then we will have to straighten the lines around that. But we did not have charts of a significantly high resolution to be able to narrow it down any more than we did. So it was decided that the best policy was to go with the proposal that you see in front of you. And designated as a habitat area of particular concern. Again, there's been a lot of confusion over the role of Phase 1 and Phase 2, and it needs to be stated very clearly that this is the Phase 1 action simply designating the area that we're concerned with, and we are concerned with that area, that whole area we're concerned with. Management actions will be something completely different, and or at least largely different, and we'll have to take into consideration the specific type of bottom in the areas that are east of the 50-meter line. And as just an aside, on the northwest corner, there is that little jog that goes out to the west of 70 West. That is included. The wording is sort of clear, but I just want to make sure that it's in the record that is not excluded because of the indication that we wanted to go to 70 degrees west. Thank you.
Anyone else on the committee? Anyone else on the council? Dr. Pierce.
All right, I lost track. I was reading material. Has a motion been made on behalf of the committee? Okay, it has been made. Quite a bit of information is before us regarding the committee's motion and other ideas that have been offered up regarding an HAPC in the Great South Channel area. And I do support an HAPC in the Great South Channel area. I'm still struggling with the boundaries. And that's why I was the maker of the motion at our last council meeting that initiated this, to have further analyses done looking at the National Marine Fisheries Service database for juvenile cod in particular. Now, we have a Fisherman Survival Fund document before us that seems to be very well done, that has a lot of charts and figures and quite a few suggestions as to how we should proceed. It has exhibits attached to it. It has attached to it a document. I understand the Habitat Plan Development Team did not review, and I understand the reasons for that. That's the SMAST work relative to it's a report they put together dated August 2007. So that's attached. Other things are attached, and I'm trying to absorb all of that in this short period of time. I did look at it to some extent before this council meeting, but now it's, you know, front and center. Did the committee spend any time on this particular HAPC proposal offered up by the Fisherman Survival Fund that would certainly encompass a great deal more area in the HAPC a great deal more area to the west has been included in their proposal. So did you consider that proposal, and what was the response of the committee if you did do so?
We considered it extensively. And if you look at document 5 that I think most members received this morning and that the committee had in front of it yesterday, and exhibit A, it's one of the color charts that was provided. The second one that includes stations with catch of cod, small cod, less than 15 centimeters. It looks like this. We considered that extensively, and that was one of the reasons why the motion that we're bringing before you today includes an extension to the west. There was obviously a lot of discussion about that chart along what we discovered was erroneously labeled as the 50-meter contour. The blue line, you can see that just kind of dips into closed area 1 just a little bit. But if you look at the chart that's up on the screen, you'll see the 50-meter contours actually does not extend into the closed area 1. So for, I don't know, a good probably at least half hour, maybe an hour, we were looking at this and did not discover until we were comparing some other maps in front of us that the reference line that we were using in this chart was not in fact the 50 meter contour. However, it did illustrate the importance of the area that goes right up against what is closed area 1. So we had an extensive conversation about this, about not only where the scallop fishery is, but where the groundfish fishery is and the importance of the area to those fisheries, but also, in the context of what we were talking about, the importance for juvenile cod habitat. So once we realized that the line that we were using as a reference in this map was not, in fact, the 50-meter contour, however, was very illustrative of the important areas where we should be focusing if we care about juvenile cod habitat. That was when the committee went back to the PDT recommendation that does, as you can see, overlap into closed area 1 to designate that area as HAPC.
All set, Dave? Anyone else?
Well, if I could, Mr. Chairman, I've got another question that relates to the document that went to the committee from the plan development team. That's number 1 in our binder. And obviously this document is quite relevant to our discussions because within that document we have the motion made by the recommendation made by the plan development team and supported by the committee. And my question is more of a clarification, I guess. That's on page 15 of the document. Where it says, extent of current or future developmental stresses. This language Is this new language, or is this language already part of our record? Was this language crafted specifically for this document, or was it excerpted out of some other document this council has already approved?
I believe it was taken from the draft EIS for phase one of the habitat amendment.
Okay, thank you. This particular language obviously has gotten quite a few members of the industry concerned regarding the designation itself, because it strongly suggests that whatever HAPC boundaries we establish, within all those boundaries, there are threats from bottom trawling and scallop dredging. I don't think it was the committee's intent to say, just clarify this for me, it wasn't the committee's intent to say that throughout this entire HAPC and every area of that HAPC, there are threats from bottom trawling and scallop dredging. My understanding is that the next step in this process will be to take this area, if this is what we adopt as an HAPC, and then to, in a much more fine-scale manner, determine within that area where indeed there might be habitat that would enable us to say with confidence that indeed there are some threats from bottom trawling and scallop dredging. It's a very important point for us to make and a guideline to live by. So could you clarify that for me, Sally? That's the next step in this process, correct? To do the fine-scale evaluation of where within this HAPC we might want to be considering some restrictions regarding bottom trawling and scallop dredging.
Yes, that's true. And the reason that these pages 14 and 15 are important is because that's the justification that needs to be provided to designate an area as a habitat area of particular concern. And as you can see on the last page, which was also lifted out of the draft EIS for the habitat amendment, and that summarizes the previous two pages in part, the area as a whole meets all of the criteria necessary to be designated as an HAPC. And furthermore, the requirement in the regulation is if a council opts to designate an HAPC, then it must only meet one. However, it's noteworthy that this area meets all four, plus the additional council preferences that were expressed over 2 years ago when this whole process first started. And I realize your question is the intent that based on the language that says there is a threat from bottom-tending mobile gear to exclude bottom-tending mobile gear from the entire area? That's what your question is. And I haven't said that would be the case for any of the areas that we're looking at. I think closures and gear restrictions are very appropriate and the best way to go in some places, not all places. I'm not going to sit here today and say that every single place in there is that important in terms of being completely exclusionary. There probably are some places, though, that are. I'm not going to say, I can't say which ones are and which ones are not right now, but I'm not going to say absolutely no to all of them. I don't think that's really feasible at this point. I think the most important thing, though, is, we've tried very hard to make phase one based on designating essential fish habitat and focal areas, HAPCs, based on their importance as habitat. And in phase two, then, we have to consider what the impacts of the fishery are on the habitat and what the impacts of potential management measures to protect the habitat are on the fishery.
All right, thank you. That clarifies that clarifies the committee's position, and it gives me a level of comfort that I need in order to be supportive of this particular recommendation. The level of comfort is that there should be no assumption that every habitat, every bottom type, well, that within this HAPC, there is so much bottom habitat there's bottom habitat within this area, of course, that likely will be eventually off limits to bottom trawling and to scallop dredging. That's, I think, a foregone conclusion. We're going in that direction, but no one should assume that there will be that sort of consideration for prohibitions of that type throughout this entire HAPC. It will be a more deliberate effort using other data sources for us to make those eventual determinations, such as the data provided by SMAST in their report that describes the different bottom types as judged from video surveys.
Anyone else in the council? Dave Gaith.
Yeah, to David Pierce's point, too, the list of extent and current future development stresses shouldn't be considered to be all-inclusive either. I mean, potential for sand and gravel mining. There's, cable laying, windmills, who knows what. The whole things we haven't even thought of yet. But it's just simply an attempt to kind of catalog a threat or one that's known at this time and shouldn't be considered to be an all-inclusive list.
Anyone else? Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, just as a very quick afterthought to this discussion, the question of value judgments came up yesterday, and it was discussed a little bit and then decided that it was not appropriate to phase one, that it would be part of the analysis that we would do for phase two. But it is clearly my sense, I can't speak for other members of the committee, but it was pretty clear that nobody on the committee was in favor of posing an unwarranted threat to an $80 million a year industry in that area, that we were expressing that these are areas that we have concerns about for larval cod, juvenile cod rather, and that those kinds of value discussions would be held at the appropriate time.
Okay, I'm going to go to the audience. I'm sorry, Jim Salisbury, do you want to wait till after
the
audience?
Well, I agree with and support the motives that drove the committee to this recommendation, essentially trying to expand the area to the westward as much as possible. I think that it still, to me, hasn't been addressed, the issue that really makes me uncomfortable with this, and that is that the large white area that you questioned, is that included? And the reason it's not included is it's not EFH for juvenile cod. And I think the discussion that we had at the committee made it clear that it should be, that for some reason, and it was brought out at the committee why those reasons were, that got dropped out of the selection for juvenile cod. And it has to do with temperature variations in the area. And I think it's unfortunate. And what it does is it leaves the area that is probably the most essential part of the habitat out. And it forces us to say, well, to get a more or less of a significant area, we have to concentrate on this dark shaded area, and the committee modified that to try to include the other light shaded areas and bring those in, and I think that's important to do. But what we really should be doing is try to bring in the white area that's in between those two shaded boxes, the shaded box by 72. West and north of 41. So, I mean, it's unfortunate, but because that isn't EFH, it's just not going to be considered. But to me, if we realize that that's the area that should be, then we ought to do something to fix it. I don't think it's reasonable to just say, well, tough, we made a mistake, now just let's keep on going, and of consequence, we push it out into areas where there's probably less significant importance. The scoured part of the channel is probably the least important part of the cod EFH. So my concern is that we're going to just keep on moving and not go fix this. And I would like to see that the this recommendation also address the recommendation to go back and look at juvenile cod EFH in this area and see if it should be modified. I also think, and I brought up at the committee a motion to restrict the area to shallower than the 50-meter curve, and that was defeated. I think in part because it would have left just the very narrow dark gray strip west of the 50-meter curve, which is the line down the middle of that. And I think that was obviously not satisfactory to everybody to have that. But I think if you took that area west of the 50-meter curve all the way over to 72 and the white area were included in the EFH, it would make the most significant area for juvenile cod would be included. And to me, that's the right approach, and I would urge the council to consider that. And before making any kind of an amendment or a motion, I'd like to hear the discussion, public discussion as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Let me go to the audience. Rich Canastra. Then Dave Frohler.
Thank you, Chairman, and congratulations. Rich Canastra, Whelan City Auction, and I'm speaking on behalf of Dr. Brian Rothschild, who's not able to be here today. We had Mayor's Ocean and Fisheries Council meeting on the 13th of this month, and we had a long discussion on the HAPC, particularly in called the Great South Channel closures. And what Brian is saying, and I believe he emailed Mr. Howard as far as what we felt at this council meeting, it appears that that there is no scientific rationale for the designation. We talked about at the meeting the concept and the data, and we found serious issues with both. And it is the recommendation of the Mayor's Ocean and Council Committee. It would make sense to convince you people, the council, to send this to the SSCC to examine the concept before we go any further. Thanks.
Dave Roll.
David Hurler for the Fisheries Survival Fund. I think it is important to consider the four factors that are being used to designate this proposed HAPC. The first is importance for cod. The information that you're using is principally survey information that's presence and absence of juvenile cod over an extended time period. The problem in the white area is that there's very little survey information in there, so your whole presence-absence picture gets sort of skewed to the east because that's where surveys are. And to say that, and then you miss the white area. You start, and then when you go ahead and you base your HAPC on that, you're looking at the wrong place. We had presented essentially two all the way through. We basically said it's important to look at the 50-meter contour. That came from SMAST last year. The specific words that there was a distinction between inside and outside 50 meters from the bottom composition that was invited by the council and that was submitted. Same information was submitted this year, and we've had to put it in ourselves. It's the same set of maps. You have in your COD document a recognition of the importance of the 50-meter bathymetric contour. If you look at your survey information from your presence absence, there is more inside of 50 than there is outside of 50. If you look at what SMAST has in terms of the bottom composition, you know, there are a couple of areas with that light up a little bit darker outside 50, but most of the complex area is inside 50. So that contour is significant. I guess if you look at benthic epifauna, the 50 meter you see of sort of plants, about the only thing where there seem to be more of them outside 50 are tunicates. When you look at animals, what they've measured is scallops, and most of the scallops are outside 50 meters. Dr. Kenchington last year said that scallops and scallop presence show a different form of bottom type that's faster. The currents run faster. The area is more scoured. Interestingly, yesterday, while we were at the Habitat PDT, the scallop PDT met, and it sounds like they've decided that an area that ought to be a rotational closure for scallops is what you're talking about here for HAPC, at least aside. This is where the scallops are. So your information doesn't necessarily point you to designating all that area. Again, to say that, oh, there may be a couple of stations outside 50 where you see cod or where you see boulders, so we have to protect it all, I think that pretends to a degree of precision here that simply doesn't exist in the habitat process. It just doesn't. We've brought good information. We apologize that the 50-meter contour that was shown, for some reason the program didn't work quite right in setting it up in the chart that we presented, but it doesn't change the other information that you were presented that wasn't based on that. Again, we had presented, we've been asked to present some set of coordinates that might be an HAPC as opposed to using the contour. The contour works fine if people don't want to get into the exact coordinates. We understand that. So that, again, in terms of importance to COD, I think a final point that was made yesterday, and I appreciate you letting me talk a little bit because this is a big deal, is that as the COD go from young of the year to juvenile, their affinity for the bottom as cover changes, and that the smaller cod more inshore in that area use the bottom for disguise more than the bigger cod once they get to be above 17 up into the 20 centimeter size. So you're again, that points to looking inshore. The rarity of habitat, it's basically, the way the PDT came down after saying that it couldn't designate anything before, had no information to designate anything, is now, well, the whole channel is rare because it's the only channel we have. That seems a little over-inclusive. It doesn't seem to be tied in any particular way, again, to what's on the bottom and the information we have that's on the bottom. It's the channel and currents run through it. And again, how the currents run through it and how the tides work are very different depending upon where you are in the channel, so we think that's overbroad. I do need to comment on this issue of sort of sensitivity to anthropogenic stress. That's a lot of syllables even for me. There's been fishing there and good fishing there for an awfully long time. What the Habitat PDT explained, and again, y'all may be saying it's not relevant at this point, is that there's $80 million of value. That's more than any other HAPC. It's more than all the other HAPCs combined. So whatever has been happening in there certainly isn't stopping production. So, again, we would urge the council to look more carefully at these boundaries. I take to heart what everyone's saying is that, you know, management, these aren't going to necessarily be management boundaries. But if you're sitting here and trying to create a system that you might want to use down the road, to start with something that doesn't work very well seems to be the wrong place to start. Mr. Salisbury has made some good points about, you know, you may want to consider The area to that white area up there, that white triangle. Again, we had recognized in our proposal that you may have to crop your HAPC based on where EFH is, but a better look at the EFH based on more than just survey information might give you a lot more information. It's not like this habitat process is going to start tomorrow or stop tomorrow. Pardon me. You're going to have at least another year or two. Maybe it does make sense to either use the 50-meter contour or try to fix this so that it's right or better. Thank you.
Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. I was thinking that I wish I had a nickel for every time someone, an individual council member, has reassured me that an HAPC is not going to become a closed area, because then maybe I could go away from here. I think we've heard that again today. Dr. Pierce said, you know, we'll look at this in a deliberate approach in phase two to see what is going to be the result of making this particular HAPC designation. Another comment was that, you know, nobody's interested in closing an area that produces $80 million worth of revenue. Okay, well, that kind of presumes that you're all going to be the same people making the decisions about what happens in that area, and that's not necessarily the case. Some of you may be gone. There'll be new people here. And once a designation of a area of that magnitude is made, new council members, existing council members, are going to be convinced that that's sacrosanct, that's sacred ground. You have to protect it from all mobile gear fishing. One-third of the fishable area on Georges Bank has been closed for 13 years. To even consider, even if it is a more deliberate approach, to have closures, more closures on Georges Bank without talking about opening some of the existing areas to fishing could be probably the most destructive thing that you could do in the short term to squeeze more effort into the smaller and smaller area that's available. So I do urge you, I think this particular proposal is way too broad. It needs to be refined. You need to assure us that in phase two there will be some consideration of opening existing areas that are closed to fishing. Otherwise, I guarantee the result in the short term will be a disaster for the resource and for the people who are dependent on it.
Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with everything that David and Maggie said. Is it possible to put up the existing habitat closures on this chart? Okay. I'm the one that drew that larger box. I think we could all agree, just from the cod perspective, but from most other species as well, that this is an extremely important area. There's no doubt about that. And we all agree that there's probably some habitat areas in that need a higher degree of protection. The problem here is the wrong area has been defined, and the consequences are going to be disastrous in phase two. It's simple as that. The question is, what can the council do today to correct this problem? And I think the solution at this point in time is not to vote an HAPC in this area. The council has the option in phase two to implement habitat closures. We implemented them in the groundfish amendment and in the scallop amendment. There's nothing that prevents this council under the fisheries management process to put in what I call refugia. Now, I've been arguing, you see that chart from the Fisheries Survival Fund where I've identified an area. It includes, I find it sort of strange that the PDT did not include in their proposed HAPC an area that the council has already voted as a habitat closure because of its importance. That's that triangular section that comes up from the lightship area that has a high catch in the spring of young-of-the-year cod. And it's young-of-the-year cod that David had mentioned that needs the importance. That's the size fish in under 10 meters of water that the science is highly identified as being present and requiring habitat for protection. Council has recognized that in its proposed 20-meter out to 20-meter HAPC, which encompasses a lot of this area as well, if it was in there. I think that the consequences of identifying the wrong area at this point in time is going to lead to significant handicap of options in Phase 2. And there's no doubt in my mind that this is the wrong area. It's not based on science, as has been mentioned before. The reason that shows up, it highlights, is because the scallop survey in the summer is the most efficient gear for capturing the young of the year and juvenile cod, and that's the scallop strata. That's why it lights up. That's it. That's the reason. The fisheries are on top of that place because that's where the cod migrate to when they're large. Okay, when they're 25, 35 centimeters, the pre-recruits are entering that area, and then that's where they live. They school, they depend on the bottom for food, but not for shelter. This is the wrong area, and the best action this council could do is not vote it in at this time, but in Phase 2, develop the management measures, and in the habitat sections of the scallop plan and in the groundfish plan, develop the methods to protect large cod. The rotational fishing strategy in the scallop plan is the most effective way to protect habitat. We just harvested 6 million pounds of scallops out of the lightship area, an area that we've been concerned about for years, with probably less than 1,000 hours of bottom time. That's what you're striving for, rotational fisheries management, high catch per unit effort, minimizing the bycatch. Thank you.
Mr. Brogan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gib Brogan with Oceana. We support this, and we hope that you'll push this one through after careful consideration. Going through the Habitat PDT, some of the other things that came out in their discussions were identifying this as one of the three cluster areas for juvenile cod in the region, the others being the western Gulf of Maine and the northern edge of Georgia's Bank, which have both received HAPC designations, and that this makes a natural third into that set to give depleted cod the attention that it needs. I don't need to remind all of you that this council is for managing all of the fisheries, not just the scallop fishery. Right now, cod is in a rough shape, and as we start to see some inklings of recovery in southern New England cod, we should be doing what we can to shepherd this recovery along, protect this habitat that the Habitat PDT has shown is important to juvenile cod. I hope that this will get your full support, and then we can look at ways to come up with sensible management during Phase 2 of this. The committee discussed this yesterday, that there are some natural areas within this larger dark gray patch which could lead to fishing areas within here, places that are not as important to juvenile cod as some of the other areas. And that's the kind of discussion that needs to happen in Phase 2. But right now, this designation is necessary to give this area the attention that it deserves. Thanks very much.
Got Mr. Kendall, then Mr. Williamson, then Mr. Libby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Chief Consulting. I agree with a lot have been said. I don't necessarily agree with what Gibb was saying, of course, but I'll try not to repeat a lot of what you already heard. But going back to when I sat on the council and we were trying to designate EFH, we took much the same approach. And for those reasons, I decided to abstain from each and every vote. And I'm so glad today that I have, because I can say I'm the only one that did. We chose areas that were uncharted, had no information, simply because they existed in the center of something else. So logic says then, well, if it's surrounded by this, then it must be as valuable as well. And this is the same approach you're taking here. We know the value. That's been proven by years, actually generations of fishing in this particular area, and in the outside value of it has remained till this day. At one point on a habitat committee, one of these staffers turned around and said, well, this is one of the most important areas on George's Bank we have to protect. And I said, exactly. And it's been that way for 50 years, as long as New Bedford's been fishing that area. It's been that valuable. It's not been destroyed. And to this day, it still hasn't been destroyed. But when you try to insert a little bit of logic into the process and say, well, if you're looking for really complex bottom, and that was the term that we used before, that was pretty relative as far as what we were looking to protect, not juvenile cod, not haddock, not one specific particular species, but complex habitat. I suggested they consider Nantucket Shoals as one, Little George's as another, the middle of George's Bank itself as another. These bottoms and pretty much have been totally ignored for the simple reason there is that there's not much fishing action in there, so we really don't have to protect it. It seems like we target the areas that are being harvested and feel that they're the most important because we fishermen wouldn't be there otherwise. Well, that's somewhat true. The problem is it also has to do with the amount of effort you have to expend to be able to fish these areas. And these areas, being complex in nature, do cause it to be harder to fish. But don't think for a moment that they can't be fished. And I think Maggie was the one that said it, that, you know, you close all these areas, then you're going to be forcing action into other areas. Now, whether you're going to stand them on top of one another and force them out by the sheer weight of numbers in too small an area, well, they're either going to leave the fishery or they're going to go to these complex bottoms that you're ignoring because there is no action taking place in them. Ron suggested that we draw up a border for an area that would protect this complex bottom. I totally support that concept. You have several others that can be dealt with in the same fashion. And to be disingenuous and say, well, a habitat area of particular concern does not necessarily mean it will be closed, is a falsehood. There is no way you're going to designate something as a nursery and then allow someone to drive through it. You just can't do something like that, just out of sheer semantics. You can't call something a nursery or a refugia and say, we're going to allow you into it. You're going to have to close it just because of its title alone. Thank you.
I'm John Williamson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Williamson, Ocean Conservancy. We support this motion and this alternative for HAPC designation. It's what's interesting in listening to all the comments being made is that there doesn't seem to be any disagreement on one thing. We all know this area is important. Anybody who's been working in management for any length of time knows that this area comes up again and again. The Great South Channel area comes up again and again as being at the center of what we manage in this region. The confluence of three great ecosystems. The Gulf of Maine coastal current funneled down through this channel. The George's Bank gyre washes over the channel. The box that's drawn around the original proposal, which is that box dashed line that's drawn, was a first attempt to encompass the significance of this area. And then you tasked your plan development team to identify what was the most essential juvenile cod habitat within that box. Your science team is what came up with this proposal. Your science team has done what you've asked them to do. And they've identified this area as having the strongest rationale for any of the HAPCs that you've considered. It meets all of the four criteria in the statute, and it meets the four criteria additionally that this council has set for HAPC designation. It clearly is, from the oceanographic and the physiologic conditions in the area, has a very rare habitat relative to what you manage in the region. And we've all heard today that it's subject to very strongly to stress from the fishing that goes on in the area. That's all you need to know for HAPC designation. And this is where you start now then wrestling with the bigger issues that flow from that. But it starts with designation.
Mr. Levy, then Vito.
Gary Libby, Midcoast Fishermen Association, Port Clyde, Maine. I didn't really want to speak to this one Pacific area as much as all closed areas or HAPCs in the future for council's consideration would be, instead of just bottom trawling, if you're going to close an area like that, I would like to see all fishing excluded from the areas. Instead of just specific types, either that or use your gear restriction for the types and allow a limited amount of fishing in there, instead of excluding just one group in this. And by the sounds of most of the conversation that I've heard, because I don't know this area that well, sounds like it needs to be adjusted a little bit. Maybe where a little more research, whether more the juvenile fish are or whatever needs to be done, I would support that, but I think closed should be closed and no exceptions. Thank you.
Veto G, then Veto C, then back to the council.
Vito Gigoloni, Northeast Seafood Coalition. A lot of excellent comments, a lot of detail given. So just to try to boil it down to the simplest terms, looking at the HAPC charge and a lot of the work that's been done, and you look at the definitions and the four criteria, you could almost replace HAPC with saying, let's find and identify a productive fishing ground. And you'd come up with almost the same definition. If you look at where, you know, that highlighted area is now, most of it, you know, as Ron Smallwood correctly pointed out, it's an absence presence. It's where they're getting juvenile caught. You know, there's a curve there. There's a lot of water activity. It's high tides. This is a definition of a highly productive fishing ground. If we give it a designation, instead of saying let's define highly productive fishing grounds, which would need diverse habitat, all different types of things, let's call it HAPC, then as Jim Kendall correctly pointed out, the concern is habitat area of particular concern is basically giving the impression that there's been some scientific definitive determination that those areas are habitat areas of particular concern, as opposed to saying this is a complex and productive fishing ground. So the concern is, of course, the allocative issues that could come as well as possibly affecting phase two. We see phase two as being potentially a difficult exercise if we're not very careful in the designations in phase one, because then you're going to spend a lot of time trying to disprove or try to differentiate between why some areas that were declared HAPC in phase one don't need protection and other areas that were declared HAPC in phase one do need protection. Without having that distinction up front, I think you could just change the title HAPC to let's find the productive fishing grounds. So for this reason, we'd be against the motion.
Vito Calamo, you have the last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the last word. My name is Vito Calmo. I'm the Executive Director of the Massachusetts Fishery Recovery Commission and a third-generation fishing captain out of the Port of Gloucester. Mr. Chairman, it's been not 50 years, like Mr. Kendall has said, but 100 recorded years that this area has produced fish of finfish, shellfish, for 100 years. It's been recorded. The National Marine Fisheries, NOAA, have recorded the beam trawlers out of Boston catching fish in this area. I always like to put a little common sense in fisheries management, Mr. Chairman. And if this was such a place that needed protection, as some people say, it wouldn't have produced fish for 100 years of recorded time. If you go upon the land and you cut away all the trees, as some people suggest that these dredges and bottom trawlers do, you would not have animals come back to that area. Because we can see that on the land as we clear-cut forests for timber. But in 100 years of fishing by a multitude of vessels out of the ports of Gloucester and Boston and New Bedford has not produced them from results. We've had, yes, good years and bad years, but production is there every year. Or we would not have $80 million of production out of that area. Mr. Chairman, I just ask you to use common sense. I have offered closures before. Just most recently, against many fishermen, I offered the closure of spawning closures to do exactly what you're saying to do. Because it helped, and it helps, and I believe in certain habitats that these fish spawn, and we close. But we move on. Over here, you're talking about, and since you come from Chatham, Mr. Chairman, I think you'll understand it as much as I do. You're talking about destroying an industry, not just closing areas, and later on we'll look at it. I agree with Maggie Raymond. Once you start this process and 18 people are replaced in 3 or 4 or 5 years or whatever it takes, the button's there to push. I think as fisheries management personnel of today, you must take in consideration of not only today, but for tomorrow as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for letting me have the last say.
Back to the council. Dave Preble, then Dave Gaethel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A number of things. There's no attempt here to protect at all. I think that I heard that said. Just wanted to get that out. The thing that goes through my mind here is that the southern New England cod fishery was devastated more than a decade and a half ago. And despite draconian measures, has failed to recover. We have seen this year perhaps a little bit of a recovery, first sign of maybe recovery, but it's basically it has failed to recover. And anybody who remembers what it used to be like knows that there is really no significant recovery of cod in the southern New England area. We also know that that means that what we're dealing with is almost certainly recruitment failure. I've been reading Brian Rothschild's book, Dynamics of Marine Fish Populations, and he says, of all the variables of recruitment, growth, and mortality, recruitment is generally assumed to have the greatest influence on the variability of stock abundance. And then later on, he said, any advances in ecosystem management must be preceded by an improved understanding of the recruitment problem. And I think that all of us know that we don't have the kind of understanding of the recruitment problem that we would like. But that doesn't mean that we sit still and do nothing. We know right now that the Great South Channel is the linchpin of cod recovery in southern New England. It meets all the criteria to be designated as a habitat area of particular concern for juvenile codfish, which is what we're trying to protect here. And so for that reason, I would urge, for those reasons, I would urge everybody on the council to vote in favor of this motion. Thank you.
Dave Gaethel, then Dana Rice.
Okay. To some of the comments that have been made, I would like to call people's attention to document number 5, which is the one titled Kelly Drive, Collier and Shannon, specifically the color diagrams, because the pages aren't numbered. They are the 3rd and 4th diagram color charts. And specifically, these two charts have a number of dots on them, which represent haul positions for scallop and groundfish surveys 1981 to 2006. This is information that's been compiled by the Trawler Survival Fund. And if you look at them, in one page, the dots that are important are the red dots, and on the other page, the dots that are important are the yellow dots. And you know, I want to kind of run people in the audience through the decision that was made yesterday by the committee, because it was not made in a vacuum, as is being implied here. This information was used extensively. And if you look at it, what you see is the red dots are cod smaller than 15 centimeters, and the yellow dots are cod 15 to 37 centimeters. And what you see is a difference in the distribution pattern, with the yellow dots generally being distributed a little more into a little deeper water. In essence, what this document did was reaffirm the work that the plan development team did. It provides you with a second source of information as to where these fish are located. And it satisfied my personal requirement that an HAPC be a representative slice of an area, but not the entire area. If you look, there's a number of yellow dots that are outside the area that we have recommended. And if you look at the red one, you'll see that there's quite a few red dots that are outside the area as well. So it's by no means all-inclusive. It's not all the habitat. It is a representative slice of the most important habitat. That was my definition for the ones that we voted on at an earlier council meeting, and it's the definition I would use to consider voting on this one today. I think it is important that we have a representative slice. I don't think we need all the area. So I just want to, again, reaffirm that this decision was not made in a vacuum, or it was not made because the PDT said this is the way you've got to go and you can't consider anything else. This was made with information provided by the fishing industry as well as information provided by the Science Center. So I want to make sure that other council members and members of the audience understand how this decision was arrived at. Thank you.
Dana Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One who sort of followed this process for some time, I got a couple of things, I guess. There have been a lot of great comments and a lot of great information, and I'm a little bit concerned about being in too much of a rush. But what interests me about this conversation is, you know, we're talking about a codfish nursery and a codfish hatchery and all of these things, and it's all been addressed. And my friend down the table here from me read from Mr. Rothschild's book about must identify the problem with the recruitment of the codfish. I'm a little bit concerned here. I don't think I'm supportive of this right now because I'm a little bit concerned here. As John Williamson described, the confluence of all of the tides in the dynamic area, and everybody here basically knows that. But I think we're trying to fix this problem half-heartedly. There's some discussion of whether you're going to allow some scallop drags in there or ground fishing in there or whatever. This is a dynamic area, and I think there are a lot of environmental issues that are happening in that area from stuff that are happening up further up in the Gulf of Maine. That's where the tide runs in and out, basically, the Great Streets, and they call it the Great South Channel. And I really think that we ought to be the cod are in trouble. But is it totally because of overfishing and because we have beat up the habitat with a scallop drag or a ground fish net? Or are there some environmental issues that we need to look at up that have had a great impact on these nursery areas? And quite frankly, I think there are. And we are completely ignoring that process. So the reason I'm not really supportive of this at this time is I guess I'm still a little bit of an optimist, I guess. I think we ought to be looking at some of the other issues that have been totally ignored in this process, and they may be affecting may be affecting the nursery areas for cod and a lot of other things in that area. And maybe I haven't explained this very well, but, you know, I think we're here to manage the resource and we're here to protect the habitat, but we're also here to protect the people that harvest that resource. They're part of an ecosystem, too. And I think we could do a little bit better, and I don't think it would do any harm to hold off and refine this a little bit more. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
John Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Follow up on a couple of comments Dana's most recently, and I think that goes back to the EFH designation. I think process is probably the point of clarification here that needs to take place. And we have phase one, which was designating by the Council of EFH. Now we're sending that up for public comment, as I recall. And at some point, I would think that we'll be looking at that public comment and then refining as necessary. Am I missing it at all, Mr. Chairman? We're not going to get public comment further on what we've already sent out? Or?
No, we've already had public comment at the council meetings. We'll go out with a final, with a draft EIS later when we combine the two.
When we combine everything. And at that time, we would get additional comment. It sounds to me like some of the comments that we've already heard, which is that we've missed an area for EFH, is very appropriate to consider at that time and modify it based on public comment. So that gives a mechanism to try to address the need to protect areas that may very well be nursery areas that were not sampled. Surveys don't go in them because of the shallowness or whatever else, and therefore we would not have them marked. But that does provide that mechanism to provide that EFH. And I think that at the same time, if that happens, then the language of what, if this passes, this HAPC passes, it addresses where EFH has been designated for juvenile cod. And if it has been further designated in the complex areas, then I think that without further changes, that HAPC would then apply to those areas that are now in white. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Pearson, Sally.
Before I vote on this issue, I have to have a very clear understanding as to how the Habitat Committee will move forward once the designation occurs, assuming that designation is made. Specifically, will the Habitat Committee move forward with an understanding that all area within the HAPC will be closed to commercial fishing, that is scallop dredging and trawling, and then you'll find out, you'll do further investigation to determine where it should be allowed, or will it be done the other way around? Will there be an assumption that the HAPC is all open to those forms of fishing, and then you'll determine where that sort of fishing should be prohibited or gear restrictions should be developed? It's a very important philosophy to understand, since if the decision is to move forward with the assumption it's all closed or all severely restricted to scalloping and trawling, and then we'll figure out where to let them go in, and then I wouldn't be very receptive to this particular designation at this time, because it tends to take away the... could you respond to that question, Sally?
I don't think it's mine to respond to. I mean, my opinion is that I think the council approach has been to identify habitat and then do things to, as it's required under the law, mitigate the impacts of fishing. So you figure out the important places that are essential fish habitat. You figure out the really important places that are designated habitat areas of particular concern. And then you figure out what to do to mitigate for the impacts of fishing. That's the approach that the council has taken. I haven't heard anything to the contrary that it's, you know, that it's everybody out until we can figure out if it's okay to let people in. I think it's historically been the reverse, whether that's the appropriate or not appropriate way to go. So I hope that's my personal view on what the council has done in the past and the approach to measures to mitigate the impacts of fishing on essential fish habitat.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I would appreciate for the council discussion regarding that issue. Is everybody out of the pool beforehand and then you got to try to get back in, or is it the other way around? What have we done so far up to this particular point relative to HAPC's designations and what and how we restrict the gear within inside of those areas? I'm not on the Habitat Committee. I haven't been ever on the Habitat Committee, and it's put me at a bit of a disadvantage. So that's why I'm asking these questions. I need to make sure that I understand the process better than I understand it now as to how this council will treat these HAPC designations. Okay, if it's designated this way, if those are the boundaries we establish for ourselves, are we then sending the signal to the industry that you're all out of the pool and we'll figure out how to let you back in a piecemeal fashion? Or do we say everybody can stay in the pool and then we'll point to individuals and say get out of the pool? To me, that's extremely important to understand before we establish these concrete boundaries.
Anyone on the council want to try to address that from their point of view? John Nelson.
Yeah, having been on the Habitat Committee for a long time, there were very few HAPCs designated. I believe it's the Erie 2, and if I remember correctly, some of the rivers in Maine were designated, and for salmon. I do not recall any measures being put in place to address HAPCs, neither on the rivers or in Area 2. Area 2 happened to already be closed. So, I mean, you can look at it from that standpoint and say, well, it's already closed. We would look at it closely to see if any other activities should take place there. I think the council has done that in the sense of when we allowed yellowtail and I think it was yellowtail harvesting in Area 2, and they decided not to go up to a certain area where there was a little bit more complex habitat, which included HAPC and did not include HAPC. So I don't think we passed anything that has said, once you have an HAPC, this is what will happen.
Sally?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we've had a good debate on this, a good discussion, not just today, but over the previous 2 years on this issue, and therefore I would move the question.
So I don't believe you can actually move the question since you made the motion. It was a committee motion. Mike Leary.
Just to follow up to John Nelson's, the closed area 2 HAPC, we had EFP, and we tried to get in there. And it's very, very hard to get permission to get in one, even in a closed area. HAPC is actually a pretty good place to store lobster gear.
Anything new from the council? Any new points that haven't been made? Okay. Jim,
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not being at the council meeting when you all made the decision to include all of the offshore marine canyons in the HAPC, I'm wondering why this one is generated so much discussion as opposed to the 16 or 12 or 16 offshore canyons that are included in that list. Half of them, by the way, are in the Mid-Atlantic area. I believe, if I read the minutes right or reviewed the tapes right, that there was very little discussion on that issue. What is the big difference in this Great South Channel versus the offshore canyons?
Anyone want to take a bite at that? Dave.
I guess I'd beg to differ. I thought we talked for a considerable amount of time on the canyons, and this happens to be the subject today, so we're talking about it for a couple of hours. I don't see that it's all that different. There is more discussion because there, you know, it's apparently $80 million worth of resource here, and I know we spent a lot of time talking on this redefinition of essential fish habitat, and now it's turning out that an area that may be very important in terms of juvenile cod has maybe been overlooked, and so we're generating some difficulty identifying an HAPC. So that those are two reasons why, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about this area.
Terry, you have the last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim's comment reminded me of the reason why I made a motion at the last council meeting against the big box approach for the offshore canyons, and I'm afraid that I feel the same way about this particular motion. I support the concept of the closure, but I'm concerned about the potential impacts for the fisheries that are dependent upon this area. I think that Jim Salisbury was going somewhere with his original proposal, and I know we don't have time to do the analysis, so I'm going to vote against this motion.
Okay. Paul Howard, roll call vote, please.
Please answer yes, no, or abstain. Mark Gibson.
Yes.
David Simpson.
Yes.
Jim Salisbury.
No.
Dana Rice.
No.
David Preble. John Nelson.
Yes.
Terry Stockwell.
No.
Pat Kirkle.
Yes.
Sally McGee.
Yes.
Mike Leary.
No.
Tom Hill.
Yes.
David Gaethel.
Yes.
David Pierce.
No.
Rip Cunningham.
Yes.
Frank Blount.
Yes.
Motion carries. 10-5.
Motion carries 10-5. Sell anything else under habitat?
I do have one motion, Mr. Chairman. It's not a committee motion, but there was a great deal of discussion at the meeting yesterday about the value of input from SMAST. This has been a discussion that has taken place over the past 3 years as the Habitat Committee and the PDT have developed the new EFH designations and the HAPC proposals, and their input is extremely valuable and much needed, and I would like to have their participation in a more deliberate fashion rather than what I've been thinking of as kind of the 20 questions approach, where we ask a question and then they respond. It tends to put us in a position of not, I think, making the most of what could be a more productive partnership. So I would make a motion that the council write a letter to invite one SMAST faculty or graduate student to participate as a member of the Habitat PDT.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dr. Pierce. Discussion? Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, only that it makes a great deal of sense. A tremendous amount of research is done at SMAS regarding characterization of the habitat. As a matter of fact, some of the information provided to us in the report that wasn't accepted by the Habitat Committee, and I understand why, you know, that some of that information influenced my vote on the previous motion that we took, because I still support an HAPC, but that particular boundary didn't quite sit with me as a consequence of that database that could not be looked at. So it is valuable data. They need to be more involved in the process in a formal way. Their expertise needs to be taken advantage of, so this makes a great deal of sense.
Any objection from the council members? All those in favor, raise your hand. 15. Opposed. Motion carries. Sally, anything else on your habitat?
That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we're going to break for lunch back here at 2:30. We're going to take up multi-species.